Good morning. Welcome to the Message of Truth. My name is Keith Greer. I'm the local minister here at the Harrisburg Church of Christ. I want to thank you for listening to our broadcast this morning. We have a very extensive website, churchofchrist@harrisburg.com. You'll find these radio program and MP3 files. You'll find a host of Bible-related videos, 30-minute in length on various subjects, and a host of other Bible-related material and some information about the church here in Harrisburg. Please give it a look. At the end of our broadcast, we'll be giving you the regular periods of worship and Bible study periods at the Harrisburg Church. We encourage you to come and be with us at any opportunity you might have. We'd love to see you. We don't want anything from you, just to show you a need for God in your life and to have a relationship with His Son, Jesus Christ. Today, we continue our study of the wonderful book of Hebrews. Today, we want to talk about the purpose of the incarnation of Christ. We're going to be reading from Hebrews chapter 2, beginning in verse number 5. For he was not put the world to come, of which we speak, in subjection to angels. But one testified in a certain place, saying, what is man that you are mindful of him, or son of man that you take care of him? You made him a little lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honor, set him over the works of your hands, and have put all things in subjection to him. For in that you put all things in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we do not yet see all things put under him. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he might, by the grace of God, he might take death for every man. For it was fitting for him, for whom all things, and by whom all things, in bringing many sons to glory, making the captain of their salvation perfect through suffering. For both he who sanctifies and those who are being sanctified are all one, for which reason he is not ashamed to call them brethren, saying, I declare your name to my brethren. In the midst of the assembly I will sing praise to you. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, here am I and the children whom God has given me. Insomuch then as the children have been partakers of flesh and blood, he himself likewise shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is, the devil, and release those who through all the fear of death all their lifetime were subject to bondage. For indeed he does not give aid to angels, but he does give aid to the seed of Abraham. Therefore in all things he had to be made like his brethren, that he might be merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself has suffered, being tempted, he is able to aid those who are being tempted. Now in these verses of our reading this morning, we see the purpose of the incarnation of Jesus Christ. Having securely discussed and proven the deity of Christ without any reservation, in chapter number 1, the writer now states the other side of the coin, Christ's humanity as a fact of truth, not conjecture. Now we are going to see why both are fitting and both are true according to God's plan. Who was put in the world to come to be in the place of subjection? Angels, man, or Christ? The writer quotes from Psalms chapter 8, verse 4 and 5 to explain it was Christ. What is man that you are mindful of him? God cares for the whole human race. In all the wonders of God's creation, why would he be mindful of men? Because that's the pinnacle of his creation. He was created in God's image. The Son of Man that you take care of him. Why should he bother with us? Because he loves us. Because he created us to have fellowship with him. We are lower than the angels, yet we're given glory and honor. How? Even though we're lower than angels, we have been given glory and honor. Why? By putting us over all the works of his hands. In Genesis chapter 1, beginning in verse 26 through 30, we see that all the things that God created, men were given dominion over them. They were given jurisdiction over them. Man lost it for a while, but God plans to restate it at a later time. It was first given to man, but man can misuse it, but it was given to him to have dominion. Next, there is a contrast made between man and Christ in verse 9. he must be made like his brethren. Why? Thus it became necessary for him to take on the form of a man. Why? Because he had to take death for every man, according to verse number 9. He tasted death. He died so we wouldn't have to die. He had to be made like his brethren. Thus it became necessary for him to take on the form of a man. If this was not done, how could he be the perfect mediator? How could he be the perfect sacrifice? How could he be our high priest for all of mankind? Philippians chapter 2, verse 5 through 11 says he took on the form and fashion of a man. He humbled himself even to death, the death on the cross. Why? Why must he die? He must die for the sins of all mankind. This must be done in the flesh, not in the spirit, but in the flesh. We read this in the prophecy of the suffering servant in Isaiah 53, 1 through 12. He might take death for every man. God loveth. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. John 3:16. He came to seek and save the lost. Luke chapter 19, verse 10. We are told it was fitting for Christ to take both roles for us. This was a great stumbling block to the Jews. Yet we can see why such a death was needed and why Christ was the perfect sacrifice, because he had no sin. By whom also all things were made, for whom all things were created. We read this earlier in the book of Hebrews in chapter number 1. He is the one to die for the plan to come together. He became the author of our salvation, according to 1 Corinthians 15:22 and Romans 5, verse 19. Perfect through suffering, made complete, nothing wanting or further needed. Christ is our sanctifier. He sanctified many sons, the sons that would obey him. We are all one, all the same Father, all the same brotherhood. Jesus is not ashamed to call us his brethren. Again, this is quoted from Psalms 22, verse 22. Has reference to David, then to Christ. This is an intimate relationship between Christ and his people. According to God's purpose, that the Messiah be a man. Therefore, understanding his nature in tribulation, he could understand man's point of view because he would experience the same. Isaiah, children relationship to the people, and Christ relationship to his children. Again, this is a type and an anti-type. Not to make too much of the comparison, but understand this was done for our benefit. Partakers in flesh and blood. Why? In so doing so, he would destroy death. In Psalm 16, there's a prophecy that his soul would not be left in Hades. And it wasn't. He resurrected on the third day. Only through Christ can we be free from the bondage of fear of death. That's what Hebrews 2, 14 and 15 tell us. Why? In verses 14, 17, we are told why. To the death of Christ. To make him a merciful and faithful high priest. In so doing, Christ can understand perfectly what you and I go through, and that's why he is the mediator between God and man, the man Jesus Christ. And so why did Jesus have to take on the flesh, and why did he have to come in the form and fashion of a man? In order to die, in order to be the supreme sacrifice, in order that we might not have to taste death. In Hebrews 2:9, he was made lower than the angel for the suffering of death. That's why he came. He understood that he was going to die. He was going to be the sacrifice. He was going to be the one that would give his life in order that we might not have to taste death. And it was fitting for him. It was fitting because that was God's eternal plan. And according to verse 14 and 15, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death. Satan's trump card was destroyed when Jesus overcame the grave and released those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. Death is not the end of our existence. Death is not the end of our story. And so we are going to overcome death, and we have that assurance by Jesus' victory over death when he died on the cross, but was resurrected on the third day, and then ascended back to heaven. For indeed he does not give aid to the angels, but he does give aid to the seed of Abraham. We benefit from that. He's our mediator, 1 Timothy 2:5. He is our intercessor. He understands how we can be tempted. He was tempted in all ways like as we, yet without sin. He gives us the ammunition on how to defeat Satan and how to overcome temptation and sin. And he had to be made like his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for our sin. What does that mean? That means a covering, an atonement. He became the atonement for our sin. Now, what we need to understand in closing this morning is that Jesus was both God and man at the same time. This is the incarnation of Jesus Christ. Now, it is difficult for us as human beings to get our minds around the concept of God and man existing at the same time. This was only done once. It will never be done again. And it was done strictly for the purpose that God's plan would come to fruition, that the Son would understand the plight of man, his difficulties, his struggles, his obstacles, and give him the means of how he could overcome them. And then he would die for the sins of the world, that he might pay the ransom price for sin, that we might not have to die. That was through his body. His body was scourged. It was beaten. He was hung on a cross. And he died as a man. He yielded up the spirit when he died, according to John 19, verse 30. All this was done to benefit us. All this was done in order that we might have life and have it more abundantly. The incarnation of Jesus Christ was necessary for the salvation of mankind, in order to find the remedy for sin, to have an actual remedy that can be applied to the sin-stained soul, that could redeem us, that could forgive us, that could acquit us, that could justify and sanctify us, and reconcile us back into fellowship with God, even though we had sinned. All this was accomplished by the life and the man of Jesus Christ. And so he was incarnated, God and man at the same time. Now, you and I might not understand all the details of that relationship. We might not even be able to comprehend how God was able to keep them separate while he was on the earth. But we just must acknowledge and we must believe that he did both. He was both the Son of God and the Son of Man. And he experienced all the things that you and I did, yet without sin. And he overcame sin to show us how to defeat him. When he was tempted in the wilderness, he said, "It is written." He defeated Satan's temptation with truth. That's how we defeat Satan today. We defeat sin by applying truth, by going to God's word and applying the application of the truth contained therein. We can overcome sin. He told us about our enemy. He told us about his tactics. He told us about what his goal is. And he told us how he's going to try to destroy us. Why? That we might defeat him. But understand the incarnation of Jesus Christ. As difficult as it might be for us to get around the concept, we must believe every aspect of it. He was fully man. He was fully God at the same time. As John 1:18 says, he was the only begotten. He was one of a kind, one of a class that will never be done again, and men will never see the likes of again. It is up to you and to me to make that life and that death meaningful by being obedient to his will, by following him and guiding us through his word, that we might be found faithful in the end and given a home with him in the after while. The incarnation of Christ was necessary to give us eternal life.